Okay, welcome everybody to Enlighten Radio, www.enlightenradio.org. You can go there, or you can go to player.enlightenradio.org, and there's a player there. We have, although I noticed this morning early that it was off. I don't know why it went off. It was on last night when I went to bed. But anyway, and today's show is the Recovery Radio Show with my good friend and longtime co-host here, James Boyd. Who?
Good morning.
Kind of half.
Good morning.
Half West Virginian and half New Jerseyan, and my wife.
We have
never,
and have.
My wife, who's in New Jersey,
well, we full circle.
Has never embraced West Virginia, but completely. Yeah. But she tolerates it. But she anytime something bugs her, she says, "Well, from New Jersey, we don't do things that way." Blah blah blah. so. But anyway, welcome everybody, and welcome James.
Go ahead.
I was gonna start up with a little song here, get us going here. And this
is a
Commodore's song from ancient days, the Night Shift, but it's a tribute to Marvin Gaye and a couple of other people too. But I love this tune, and
What was I doing on the night when night shift?
On the night shift. Here we go.
That's a good one, John. Pull it out the phone. Pull it out the phone. Check it out, everybody.
Marvin, he was a friend of mine, and he could sing his song. His heart in every line. Marvin sang of the joy and pain. He opened up our minds. I still can hear him say, "Oh, talk to me so you can see what's going on. Say you will sing your songs forevermore, forevermore. Gonna be some sweet songs coming down on the night shift. I bet you're singing proud. Oh, I bet you'll pull a crowd. It's gonna be alright on the night shift.
On the night shift,
you found another home. I know you're not alone on the night shift.
Jackie,
hey, what you doing now? It seems like yesterday when we were working out.
Jackie,
you set the world on fire. You came and gifted us. Your love, it lifted us higher and higher. Oh, say you will sing your songs forevermore, forevermore. Gonna be some sweet sounds coming down on the night shift.
On the night shift,
I bet you're singing proud.
You're listening to Enlighten Radio and the Recovery Radio Show. www.enlightenradio.org.
It's gonna be alright on the night shift.
Good morning, everybody.
You found another home. I know you're not alone on the night shift.
Wanna miss you?
Hey, man. So we'll take a little break. We'll come back maybe to that in a little bit, and but I don't want to spend too much time on the music. Welcome, James. Well, listen.
Welcome, John.
We got the official start of the show here. Well, I just want to say I am pleased that Donald Trump has been indicted. I think he committed crimes, and I don't see how, if you don't indict him, the country doesn't just keep heading down the road of division that would make made a mockery of claims around the world that we live in a democracy. And and I'm not sure that getting rid of Trump changes that the level of hypocrisy a whole lot because it's there regardless of Trump. But nonetheless, you couldn't even advertise yourself as a democracy if you don't do something about him. On the other hand, you're not going to solve big political divisions in court. And the big political divisions in this country, in my opinion, are based on just unbelievable inequalities. It's like the system has run amok, gone out of control pretty much completely. And, you know, dumping Trump won't fix that stuff. It won't, okay? Even though I understand why people, you know, feel like they have to. And I'll just say one other thing. Well, I want to hear your views on this, James, but... all during the January 6th uprising, you know, when these people with raccoon hats and painted faces and people that looked like they had been falling off a bar stool in the American Legion Hall someplace, had a coup. It didn't look like a coup to me. It looked like a movie about a coup. When I was living through it, didn't seem something was wrong.
Like a bunch of badly mistaken people to me.
Yeah, I didn't. I know it was seriously dangerous, and I know people, and a couple people got killed. So it's not. It wasn't complete fake, but it didn't seem. It bothers me, and to this day, I think I'm being. I feel like I'm being played, a little bit,
trust your gut.
I don't even know by who, you know. But it's just. I get the feeling that it's wag the dog time, you know. Hey, man, you know, there's a big event taking place down to the stadium. There's a riot. Everybody head down there. All the cops too. It's all get down there. In the meantime, somebody in the background robs all the banks. You know, while you're down at the big event.
About that. What?
that's how I feel. Anyway, how do you feel about it?
I feel enlightened, to say the least, because this is just what I see. Even when hearing people give their explanations about what they see, and I'm looking. So you take a car with four good tires, and then you have a flat tire. That's the presidential race every 4 years, and you put a donut on the car, right? Because the place where you look inside and all you see is donuts. But anyway, you go in the car, you get the donut, and you go to the place to take the donut off, because that's what the donut is for, temporarily, right?
Right.
You know, you had a flat tire, that's a mistake.
Right.
Put the donut on, get to the place where you can get a real tire.
Right.
Well, we got to the place, and all that was in the place was more donuts. And if everybody knows what a donut is on a car,
right,
that's the really small wheel that's just there to
get you to the gas station.
So we can hobble over to the repair shop.
Yeah, right.
They're not repairing it. They're just giving more donuts. And so we're gonna use another donut. And so here's where the simplicity and the not so simple comes into play, where people are so dysregulated by the need to have needs. It's just amazing how it pushes you and it pushes boundaries, and we don't even hear the subtle language that's being spoken to us. I was reading Senator Manchin's interview about his opinion about the indictment of the president, and one of the things that he emphasized right off the top is to remove all doubt. That's why he's saying that the indictment should go forward very carefully. But some of his reasoning for wanting that is later found in his statements to the country, you know, and he says that that America is time for America. You know, no one is above the law, but no one should be targeted by the law. And for me as an African American, am I included in his no one theory? Mm. And I don't think so. I don't feel that, yeah. Right? And not only do I not feel it, I see that he is spitting in the face of the Democrats and telling them it's raining. And somehow we believe it, so we let him stay, or we don't have the power to go and ask this guy, hey, listen, are you for us or against us? What's your problem here? You know, you own everything that anybody could ever want to own, who especially someone who is very so unappeasing to me as Mr. Manchin, because I met him. I had personal contact with him, yeah, on a couple of occasions when I lived in Virginia.
Right.
And he, to me, he is so unapproachable. Right out of the gate, he is so unapproachable. Even if he comes over to greet you and say, how are you, my fellow American? You feel this distance in him.
Yeah.
That I did. And so that is my history. Yeah. And so how do I feel about the president being indicted? You know, I feel like I'm being played.
A little
just
bit.
Just like,
yeah,
you. You know what he said? Joe Manchin said, and we'll see where it goes. Now, we all know that you're not looking to see where it goes. You want to make sure it goes to a certain place. Then I'm talking about right. The outcome, the final outcome. We'll see where it goes. You think we're going to, and I would invite everybody within the sound of my voice, don't wait to see where it goes. Don't wait to see, because they're not, the people who are opposing right are not waiting to see where it goes.
No,
they get
not.
Out and go vote and go take a look down the throats of the people who are trying to shovel stuff down your throat, shovel shit down your throat.
Yeah.
You know, you go and confront these people and you say, hey, I'm calling you out on this. You know, but see, Mr. Manchin, he has so many, many times to me proven himself to be not having my and my family's best interests at heart.
Oh,
and he's not the only one. He's not the only
That's
one.
Right.
There's so many, even on a smaller level. And I say this so often on our podcast here, that in the United States, and I'm going to say West Virginia in particularly, you know, because I fell in love with West Virginia, the rolling hills and all of that. And I'm still in love with that place of the country in the United States. And I know that right. There's good trouble down there to get in. But I'm going to wrap it up, John, about that.
No, that's okay. Go ahead. Keep going, man. You're doing good.
My, how do I feel about the status of the country? You know, I feel enlightened, but I also feel jittery when I supply myself with the answers to what is it that I'm actually looking at, you know, and I'm teaching myself and I'm learning every day not to jump to conclusions very often, you know, but when something keeps hitting you in the face and somebody's spitting out the window, it's not raining. It's blowing back in your face.
Exactly. Yeah, I hear you,
it's
man.
It's not raining, people. It's spit. It's saliva. Go ahead.
Well, or they used to say, when they say, don't piss down my back and call it raining, isn't that an old expression or something like that?
Yeah, they say a lot of that stuff, man. A lot of that stuff. What people think is a joke.
It's not, apparently not. Yeah.
It's not a joke. It's really not. It's really a dangerous precedent, because there are things happening in this country that are so subtle, and they're so, the things that are so unforeseen. You know, when children are not equipped for the unforeseen, that's not their responsibility.
Right.
It is our responsibility as adult humans you know, to not allow our children to have any kind of contact or anything with the unforeseen on their own. You know, we should be giving them information that that's going to regulate their lives, first of all, and also giving them information that will help them to make healthy, well-rounded decisions throughout their life. And all of the moral injury, I believe, that is taking place, that has been taking place throughout the years, has not been addressed at all. It's hardly even talked about because you have to prove your case. Well, guess what? Your system, your all of these parts of the central nervous system and all of the agencies that take up residence in your body, all of the autonomics that happens in your body, they don't have any idea about what is going on and why things are being coded the way they are. You know, yep. You're a coder. Yep. You know what coding does. Yeah.
Yeah.
And your central, in your life, it gets coded and you begin to believe a certain way. And so when you grow up and your coding has taken place, and, you know, I think you stop the formative years. It's around 18 to 20, something like mm-hmm. that. But they give it 18 years, up to 18. And so you set at 18 years old, right? And you're getting ready to get out of college, and you've been told all your life that you are the best there is.
Mm-hmm.
Your morals and standards as the president of the United States are above reproach, because without those standards, you would not be accepted as the president of these United States. And see, that was my belief as a child. And I used to wonder,
right,
how did all these white people stay good for so long?
Yeah, how did that happen? Right.
I couldn't make it a school day having an encounter with law enforcement, you know. So you take those things now. Then you find a guy that was in class with me getting in more trouble than I could ever think of getting into. And then you look up and he's the president of the United States.
Yeah.
And then you say, well, you know, I'm going to use the name Breslin. I had a guy in the army with me. His name was Breslin. And he's a white guy. And he was privileged. His head, you know, his whole temperament and everything let you know that he was of the Breslin family.
And the
family was military. And he was, you know, and so right. Breslin. Well, yeah. All of the poor guys and everything, all of the farmers from Oklahoma and all of us guys and from Newark, New Jersey, poor people, you know, we set Breslin up. We wanted to teach him a lesson that he wasn't better than anybody, right? You
yeah.
know? And so we did harm to him because we kind of made him cry, man. We did some things that are not appropriate because who gave him that kind of thinking?
Yeah.
Who gave him that around the breakfast
family,
table?
Obviously. Well, not just his family. I mean, there's a lot, you know, I can't even... It would be way too sickening to even relate, you know, the conversations I could recall. I don't think about them very much from my childhood around Washington Golf and Country Club in Arlington, Virginia. It's too sickening to relate. It really is. I mean, it's not always the the vulgar kind of race or class orientation. It's cultured, right? People don't, you know, throw the N word around a lot. You know, they don't talk about directly all the times about how lower class people or whatever. but what they do is that they have this whole thing. Like we used to have people come to the door in Virginia, services like laundry people. Take your laundry out, do the dry cleaning, mow your yard, do whatever, all these services. And I remember it was common if someone came to the door, all right, and they had like a uniform shirt on, and maybe their name printed across a shirt, like James or Bill or something like that, if they were had been working for the company for a while. And so I remember my grandmother would feel perfectly all right referring to any black or brown person by their first name. You know, even though she did not know them. She didn't know anything about them at all. Okay. But whereas if he was a white person, it would be Mr. So-and-so and Mrs. So-and-miss. You know, there was this, I said, it's an example of this informal, you know, it's like the plantation mentality. Nobody, everybody's last name was the owner of the plantation, so they only had first names. I mean, mm-hmm. Right? And
boy,
yeah, yeah.
Boy,
I mean, it, yeah. And so, but you sit around that stuff, and people would, you know, it didn't matter if there was a massacre someplace or this, and you know, it would be, well, we don't want to talk about that right now. No one wants
that's good. That's a good conversation for me. It equips me for the day because I know I'm not alone.
And, you know, we don't want to mention that.
Spit it out. You know. Get rid of it and take it to another level.
And mm-hmm. So yeah, I know what you mean.
What went well? I love that quote. What went well for you yesterday, John?
Well, yesterday. Yesterday was Wednesday. Well, we had actually. I've gotten my automation on my I can turn around a podcast now in about 10 minutes. Unless I mess up the recording, which I did yesterday. Mm-hmm. Or no, day before mm-hmm. I did. You know, somehow Zoom wasn't recording right and the songs sounded terrible. I had to go cut mm-hmm. each one of them out of the tape and then replace it with an actual, you know, I had to re-record the actual recording of the song, right, mm-hmm. and then insert it back in and all these places. Well, that took 3 hours, you know, so that wasn't good. But other than that, you know, I've gotten, you know, I haven't had a single day. Every day I've gotten the stuff up within an hour or two, except for that one day it took three, mm-hmm. all the way up. And so that is positive because that means I got a production schedule that I can mm-hmm. I can be. Now I'm going to try to get our friends that want to do this radio program to mm-hmm. Take on more of the social media publicity. Like, for example, I hope that you and I hope that Mike or whatever, you know, whatever you got on social media in terms of you doing, just post these things and see, get a reaction mm-hmm. from them. And if you get people that don't like them, you know, we'll because we need criticism. We actually do. We want people to say, oh, that was a good show. Yeah. Well, no, that one you guys blazed off forever and I got bored, whatever. We want to hear that, right? We want people to know what connects mm-hmm. and what doesn't. So, yeah, that was my best day. It was just yesterday. I think we've gotten the technology. Mm-hmm. I feel good about it. And but I feel terrible about the where I don't feel that the country is moving forward. And I believe that Biden's doing, I don't agree with his foreign policy at all. I mean, I think this thing with Russia, you know, I don't agree with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but they had grievances.
Not at all.
They had legitimate grievances about the motion of NATO country by country toward their border. And Hillary mm-hmm. and the Clintons, you know, we're going to overthrow the Russian leadership. That's the only downrange outcome of this kind of policy. And Putin, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, he reacted to that. I've read his speeches, okay, mm-hmm. Where he goes through every one of the issues. They had grievances, but mm-hmm. NATO wasn't going to negotiate any of them. So he finally decided to invade. Now I think that was a mistake, but. It's not like there was no real issue there on his side. There was. The Russians have an issue mm-hmm. there in Ukraine. There was a civil war waging for 10 years before he went mm-hmm. in there, okay? Because the Russian end of the country was being, and the Ukraine, whatever the other side, with Zelensky's group. And the Clintons, especially Hillary, when she was Secretary of State, she was messing mm-hmm. up there. And Obama had to pull her back. You remember this? She wanted to arm... she wanted to directly arm those people in 2014, and she tried to get Obama to buy into it, and Obama says, no, we're not. What's the end game there? Where does it end? You know, do you think, is Russia going to let you just take over Ukraine, put it into NATO, and put nuclear weapons on his border? Which is exactly what they would have done. That's what they were going to take that Chernobyl thing and turn it around, okay? And, well, it doesn't surprise me that, you know, he took the other road, even though I don't think it was the right thing to do, because a lot of people have died. But on the other hand, there's no way out. He's not. In order to beat him, you're going to have to go all the way to Moscow and take him down. He's not giving up. They're not going to give up on that border question. So it's a case for diplomacy, and Biden's not engaging in any diplomacy, as far as I can see, on it at all. So I hold him accountable for that. That's going to ruin his presidency in the end, in my view, because Americans, you know, they let the leadership get away with starting these wars, everything. But, you know, when the bodies start coming home.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened yet in Ukraine.
Ball game.
You know, the soldiers start coming home with PTSD and all kind of drug addicted and everything else, you know, then, you know, it doesn't matter whether you had liberal positions on other questions in the country, you know, because you got all these soldiers coming back that have been hurt.
And a lot of the teenagers, young people, older people alike, that I you know, see every day on a daily basis, and we talk about things, you know, that both people can talk about, and, you know, and war and Ukraine and really useful information, it's usually not even a part of the conversation. But like you said, when the bodies start coming home, right, and so the conversation is always around the outcome of something you didn't know about. You're because right. you kind of you say, well, I didn't know. You know, I didn't, you know, I wasn't aware. The kind of, and so veterans, a lot of veterans, and I myself included, when you're serving in that environment, you have little time to really think about what your life is going to be like if you make it out of the war. Mm-hmm. And out of that environment, you know, they just don't ponder those things, you know, because for me, my moral coding had taught me that, you know, when I come home as a hero, especially if I come home alive, that my country is going to embrace me and I'm going to be celebrated, you know, because that's what they did for John Wayne and then all them people, the other people that came home out of the...
Hey, did Wayne actually ever serve? Well, did Jen?
When you're impressionable, when you have an impressionable mind like that, and moral injury sets in, but we push it away because you don't know what's going on, right? And you come home, then you have to fight forever and ever and ever all over again to actually reconcile with yourself, with your inner self, as to why, you know, your life has gone the way that it's gone, and what can you do about it? And then, you know, you find in yourself saying, well, why do I have to do anything about anything? I've done my part already.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's a whole another part of this dynamic. And then, you know, we come home from war and we're giving back to our loved ones and our communities in a dysregulated state.
Right.
All the way live. And then, you know, you run for some kind of political office, or you become a policeman, or, you know, or you become just another schmuck.
I was talking to, by the way, to a I was talking to a mine workers organizer a couple days ago, and he was going to be on the Labor Beat show next week, I think, because he's an expert on what's happening with the public employees' insurance PEIA thing here in West Virginia. Yeah. But I said, well, what are you working on organizing? He says, well, we're organizing cops in Charlestown. Charleston, not Charlestown, Charleston.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, so is that really a good idea? I was asking him. Well, I mean, anybody who's been in the labor movement a long time knows that. I mean, yeah, you can organize the cops, but when you got a problem on a picket line, they're not going to be your friend, okay? Their job is to, you know, do the company's business, basically. And I said to him, he said, well, yeah, he says, that's true. He was an interesting guy, you know. He said, that's true, but but one of the things we found out is that among the cops, at least in West Virginia, he says in other places too, there's a division between the people that got either mobilized into these, you know, SWAT, more militarized sections of the police force, SWAT teams, you know, the purchase of tons of equipment, you know, of basically armament and what it, armored carriers mm-hmm. and vehicles and stuff yeah. like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Spend a ton, Humvees. So you had a ton of money being spent on these kind of things and not on either the welfare or benefits or training or whatever of ordinary officers. You know, they weren't necessarily involved. And the injuries and to police officers didn't take place in the militarized units. You know, they took place, people walking the regular beats and all that stuff. You know, they're the ones that would get in trouble, right? And so he said they have a very powerful incentive to organize because nobody's looking after them. I mean, you know, really. I mean, everybody, a lot of people say they are, but they don't feel like it, you know, and emergency workers too. They all feel I haven't seen anything like this in many years. Okay, how angry and how disgusted, you know, some people are, and how burnt out in other cases. And the burnout takes all kinds of forms, right?
Yeah.
You know, they just busted a state cop yesterday here in West Virginia, or last week, you know, for I think it's bribes and making tons of money on the side. I know he was busting people and, you know, taking over their business, basically.
Oh. It's organized.
You ever watch that movie, L.A. Confidential?
Yeah, right.
You remember while the chief of police is taking over the dope business, right? You know, or the chief big detective.
And, you work for me now.
Yeah. Hey, you watching any of the Perry Mason series? You get that on your TV?
I did not. I was listening to you and Mike. I do get it, but I didn't watch it. I'm going to see if
oh,
I can
man.
Start.
Well,
I always liked Perry Mason.
Well, take a look
tell
at
me
the,
about it.
Now, the second season is just started, mm-hmm. okay? Now, they got an African-American actor in there playing the old Perry Mason detective called Paul Brady, okay?
I think I remember he was – that's a rerun? Or is this
well, the old Raymond Burr TV show had a detective named everybody was white in that show. Okay, but in this new version, right? I mean, they've really rewritten the entire. They actually went back to Earl Stanley Gardner's original origin story of his detective, which is he was a PTSD victim from World War I in the Battle of one of those French things where, you know, it's. What's that novel that was World War One? All Quiet on the Western Front. Okay,
which
is like it's a horror story, right? About what it's like, you know, trench warfare, you know, in Europe in 1915. Anyway, his origin story. He comes out of that as a soldier, right? And he make him a smart guy, you know, like this. So he passes the bar. Apparently in Los Angeles in the 20s, you didn't have to go to college. You could, but if you did, you just go in and pass the bar, and our bar exam hadn't changed in 30 years.
Low.
So if you get a copy of it and you got the stuff to read it and get it, right? Well, then, okay, you get to be a lawyer.
That's it. Let's go for it.
But in this one, Now, the first one, they focused on, you know, the role of hysterical religion and just general corruption of the police force in Los Angeles in the Depression area. In this one, though, they're focused on race. And I want to tell you, this guy that's acting as the detective, Paul Drake, you got to watch. He's unbelievable, man. He carries a role. He's as good as Denzel.
Wow.
He really is. I mean, this guy is good. He doesn't overact at all. But, man, he can, just a look, he can convey such intensity. You got to check it out. I get your opinion.
How do I act?
It's on Amazon Prime, okay? It's on Amazon Prime.
What's
it's Perry Mason. Done out by HBO Max, though. So that's who's selling. I think Amazon has picked it up from HBO Max.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a chance,
take a look,
especially the actor. They got all the actors are great, and the writing is just it's brilliant, man, just brilliant writing. But I tried to sell my friend Joe Sims on this.
Yeah,
you know, he's my communist friend. He's the leader of the party, actually. And and I tried to sell him on this, and so he went back and he watched. he watched the first couple episodes, and he says, "I don't know, John, I'm not quite getting it yet." I said, "Well, watch the third. The third is right now." And he finally said, "Okay, I get it. Yeah, it's really
good writing, huh?
Great writing, and it's got an approach to both." Diversity, you know, there's a gay character, African-American, Mexican-American characters, you know, undocumented people, the corrupt cops, the corrupt
everything.
Political
well,
system.
Well.
It's done well. It really is. Yeah. You know,
it's the tossed salad.
Well, and it's salad. It's an indictment. It's an indictment. Yeah.
Indictments need to happen.
It's not one
more
that
indictments need to happen.
And
they need more indictments, but you know, there's just so many indictments to be had. And you know, people getting put on the indictment. My dad said his friend Bernard, you know, people down south, sometimes very uneducated. A lot of people you come across from back in the 30s and 40s and still there. So he was going to be put on the indictment for something concerning another individual. And he thought that being put under indictment was like being sedated.
Okay.
he told my dad, he called him up. My dad said, he called me 2 o'clock in the morning. Called him 2 o'clock in the morning. He had put himself in an unknown location. And he said, I've never been under indictment. I don't even take aspirins. He said, and they're not putting me under indictment.
I love it.
So my dad did. Here's his location, bring him some supplies. Because he just wasn't doing it. I said, I've never been under indictment. You know, I don't like, people just giving me anything. I don't know what it is. So he thought indictment was... sedation. He thought he was going to be that you. He said, "You put me on the indictment, and you can do whatever you want to because I won't know the difference."
Didn't Trump?
My father said, "No, you want to go ahead."
Didn't Trump do a misstatement yesterday? He was talking about being indicted, but he said, "I got indicated." Was that a slip of the tongue or poetry? I don't know, but
I recall Covfefe.
Oh yes. Yes. Oh man.
I recall that one. I was traumatized by that because I couldn't find it in the Webster. And I said, well, it has to be in here because the president said it.
Well,
now, come on, man.
I thought he was talking about
five-year-old.
I thought he was talking about the UN secretary at first, Kofi Annan, but he wasn't. He was making up something, wasn't he? I mean,
Kofi Annan wasn't even part of it.
No, he was long past at that time.
He was talking about Alaska or something.
Yeah.
Listen, man. That dude has a relationship with the truth. And then he has alternative truths. Remember they introduced that to the world?
Yes, right.
The top people.
Right.
The top people in the country came along and said, you know, there's an alternative truth to this, you know, so.
Right. The world is in fact flat.
Yeah. You can have an alternative truth. So what is the truth? You know, I'm good with just, there's too many truths to be had. I'm good with the one that's regular that we've been had, you know, since I came into this world. You know, that's the truth.
Well,
the truth is aging out. So you have to replace it, the infrastructure, with something else. And they're putting materials into the system, into the psyche, that are not sustainable, because alternative truths, that's not a sustainable kind of lifestyle. You want to go around having a bunch of alternative truths.
Right.
And then you have to manufacture them.
Yep.
They have to be built. You know? So anyway, but life is good otherwise. My dad always says, there's some words that he uses, three words, that just sums everything up. And I can't recall the three right now, but I'm going to
you got to get those three. That's gold, man.
I'm having a senior moment.
Yeah, you and me both. Hey, I was going to ask you about it looks like there's going to be a recession.
Looks like?
Yeah, because the Federal Reserve is... Well, one thing, oil prices shot back up again because the Saudis cut supply. And, you know, the price of energy, probably the biggest single driver of cost and inflation and transport and production and everything else. The worst thing about inflation from the standpoint of the banking industry is that the loan you made yesterday at 4%, let's say you charge 4% interest, the bank charges you 4% on a loan, and then inflation goes up, and now a 4% interest rate turns out to be a loss because the inflation rate's going to 6, and it's depreciating. Your asset is losing value every day, okay? Mm-hmm. And the payments that are being made are not making up for it. So the banks hate inflation for that reason, because it erases their interest payments, which is how they make money. So they put tremendous pressure on any kind of inflation that try to get the Fed to come. That's one of its big missions, right? They want to have low unemployment and low inflation. So if inflation goes up, yes, the banks get hurt, and they are a big player and have huge influence. But ordinary people, it's a wage cut, right? I mean, high prices means same thing as someone cutting your wages. It's no difference at all. And but when you if the only thing you do to stop the inflation is to raise interest rates, well, eventually credit will dry up because it'll be too expensive, and layoffs. Look at where credit operates everywhere, right? I mean, if you're mm-hmm. a business and you have a payroll you have to meet every week or every other week, a lot of times your receipts don't come in time to make that payroll. So you get these, like, almost every business has an arrangement with local community banks or local banks to have a rollover thing. Okay, I'm going to get my income a week later, then I'm going to have to pay the payroll. I need to borrow enough to make payroll so before all my money comes in next the following week. And so it's like a rolling, very low interest. The banks don't loan it for, they loan it for like 30 days at most usually, okay? And it's low interest, so the businesses can keep going if they have a little up and down bump right for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so if the interest rates go up, that goes too. Mm. And then a lots mm-hmm. of, so you're going to end up, credit dries up, and a lot of businesses are going to go, there's going to be layoffs. So you're in Newark or in Newark area, right? Are you in Newark?
Newark.
I'm
in Newark, 07104.
What's going to happen in, what's the level of unemployment right now in Newark? It's pretty low most places. Mm-hmm. What is that like there?
Unemployment. Let me check it out.
Check it out. See, because the point is, if it goes up big time as mm-hmm. a result of these mm-hmm. interest rates being, mm-hmm. and of course, remember today is the end mm-hmm. of the mm-hmm. federal.
It's 2.5%.
Well, that's pretty low. See, I mean, if that's real, I mean, yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. Sometimes in the cities, right, you've got so much mm-hmm. informal mm-hmm. transactions going. I mean, look at all the dope business and all the. That's mm-hmm. all off the table, right? It's, you know, mm-hmm. most of it's disguised mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. cash. It's all mm-hmm. cash based. So mm-hmm. I don't know. Sometimes you got more or less. Point being is if employment goes up to 6, 7, 8% mm-hmm. or 10, mm-hmm. And also mm-hmm. at the same time, the mm-hmm. extended Medicaid that has basically saved everybody's life for the past 3 or 4 mm-hmm. years. Is mm-hmm. terminating, I think, this week. Mm-hmm. It expires mm-hmm. right now. Also, so both the healthcare, Medicaid, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. what's the other one? Medicaid and extended unemployment benefits mm-hmm. in case there is a shutdown. Mm-hmm. That's going away. So in West mm-hmm. Virginia, for example, mm-hmm.
rate in Newark, New Jersey is 6.30%.
Oh, well, then it's okay. Well, it'll go to 10
and it
or
was,
15.
8.10% last year.
Yeah. Well, last year, oh, wow. So it's, so you're like six, you're what? 4 uh-huh. points higher than the national average. Mm. I think the national mm-hmm. average is right around 3 right now, right? 3%. So you're at over 6, right? Uh-huh. Well, you're double. That's, you know, not a, that's not, I don't think that's an accident. I think all over the country, African-American employment is probably close to double the average, the national rate. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised. Mm-hmm. You got a crisis coming that could be multi-sided. Reduced health care, mm-hmm. reduced support, higher unemployment, and, that's
6.3. Wow,
that's pretty high. Actually,
that's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah.
And you know, to be quite honest with you, I'm all of these numbers, these facts, and these figures. Do they come and go? That's my question. They come and go, obviously. And so, what's the upside to all of this, in your opinion?
The upside is that there needs to be a revolutionary movement because this is you can't fix. There's no reform, so-called, that it will work that does not alter the does not change the supremacy of these giant corporations. I'm a socialist, okay, and I'm not in favor of nationalizing everything, you know, but I am in favor of the public taking control of the commanding heights of the economy and overpowering. You have to find a way to not let these corporations, like take Amazon or the top 10 billionaires. I mean, they got... You got to take them down. You can't get away. They're
easily.
Not going to go away by themselves. And even if they had, even if they were moral people, they can't fix it. Because if they start cutting their rate of profit or cutting, let's say they hate Trump. They all hate Trump. Most of them hate Trump, for example. You know, look at Bezos is probably one of the richest. He owns the Washington Post. The Washington Post, every single day, every single article is killing Trump. Every single one. And so they hate him. But, you know, I don't think that Bezos has democracy in the front of his mind. I'm pretty sure he doesn't. So you got more than one authoritarian plot going on here. And I think that I think you got to take that's got to be. And the only way it gets taken down is if it crashes. I mean, you look at the, all over the world, you know, when you get a system that for one reason or another has gone out of bounds. Carol and I have been watching these great courses, by the way, on Amazon's Prime called On the French Revolution. And you see how it's interesting. The public had all these grievances against the nobility, the privileges of the nobility, right? They got to vote. They didn't have to pay taxes. Everybody else had to pay fees and taxes and whatever. And no grain. And then, of course, there was no grain, no bread, no bread. Well, so people attacked all the privileges of the lords and, you know, the nobles and stuff, princes. But they still loved the king.
The
king stood for the nation, you know, in some way. And it wasn't until it took the king to actually run away from Paris with all of his things and refusing to sign any of them for the people to finally say, wait a minute, what?
Where you going?
The king, too. I mean, and you find you couldn't establish a republic or a government that said, oh, our power rests upon the people. We don't get it. It isn't handed to us from God, meaning the church and the Pope, okay? I mean, France was totally Catholic at that point, right? And, you know, and it turns out the Pope, the king, the nobles, they're all in it together, okay? And
all in it together.
The whole thing is a piece. You can't take one part of it out without getting the other part. It wouldn't work. And so, I mean, you know, the people in the beginning, they wanted to have a constitutional monarchy, kind of like Britain had sort of moved toward, right? Not have to take the king out and cut his head off, all this kind of stuff. But he wouldn't let them. I mean, you know, it wouldn't work. And so
baffling.
It headed toward disaster, right? I mean, for the king. And
Schadenfreude.
You know, and so I think that's happened. It happened here in the United States, you know. You couldn't live with the monarchy running things from 2,000 miles away. Takes 3 weeks or 6 weeks to get a message back and forth, right? And, you know, I mean, you can't live that. I mean, after a while, you can't live that way because they can't make decisions that remove themselves and remove their privileges. And if they give them to you, well, you never got elected. You inherited your position, you know, and it was handed to you by the king, like William Penn got all of Pennsylvania, whatever. Well,
Donald Trump.
Yeah, well, Donald right. Trump. Yeah, inherited wealth. Ah, I think you. I think that's.
Blame shame on me.
I think this you need a revolutionary movement, and I think that. But it only happens when the thing is basically crashing.
I want to add this. I want to look at this word right here. Schadenfreude is a combination that German nouns Schaden, meaning damage or harm. And fraud meaning joy. So it makes sense that Schadenfreude means joy over some harm or misfortune suffered by another. So the Schadenfreude is when people shout for joy over the suffering of others. Right. You know, I mean, and so when the Roman Empire, you know, they come up with the games in the big Colosseum, you know, and the Schadenfreude would come out and a man gets decapitated.
And everybody cheers.
Right there on stage and the crowd just goes, wow. So you get in the ring with boxers. And so the Schadenfreude theory and the ideology about that behavior, I would believe that in Hitler, Hitler, it brings to mind that kind of thing. And so around the country, man, you know, you have to you have to shout. You have to shout. You have to, when someone is so hurt and damaged by something that would just only satisfy you and the people you care about. And that's a Schadenfreude kind of behavior. And so you have to be a Schadenfreude to get ahead in this, it seems like, in this environment. And we welcome.
Well, it's Wall Street, right?
Yeah, we applaud that behavior.
Right.
And,
hey,
you know, and the Schadenfreude, yeah, you have to build up a tolerance and for an indignation, you know, not to hate hate. You can't not possibly hate hate and be a Schadenfreude.
That's true.
Because it's contradictory, you know, so you have to behave like you enjoy the hatred of others, especially when it pushes you forward, you know, gives you a leg up. You know, I want to reach this apple on the top of the refrigerator, but I can't get it unless I stand on your head, James.
Yeah.
Put your head down here. Let me step up on your head so I can reach that beautiful red apple on top.
Yeah, right.
You know, and when I get the apple, I'm not going to share it with anybody, not even you, James.
No.
Which are, if you can possibly get some of the juice, some of the drippings on this wonderful piece of fruit.
Is this a trickle-down theory kind of thing?
Yeah, but otherwise. And that big drop, don't bother that one. You know, because my Uncle Ned is out in the shed getting ready to get in the bed.
Yes.
You know, man, so, and that's how Peg lost his leg, by the way.
Yeah.
It was Ned. And when Peg went home, he found his wife in bed with Uncle Ned. And he didn't complain. He just went on. But I'm going to complain. And I'm going to complain and complain and keep complaining, you know, because that's all I have left right now. I can complain, but it gives me energy to do something about something.
Amen.
You know, it's just gone. And you said it earlier, it's run amok. So we're coming up on 7:57 a.m. right now.
I know.
So
we had our little hour here. We're doing
good.
Good conversation. I love talking to you, James.
They say time goes fast when you're having a good time.
Well, yeah, it is. Let's see if we can get a hold of
Vicky.
Yeah, let's get a hold of Vicky. I got a hold of her that one time, she said, "Oh yeah, I really want to do it," but she travels. I don't know.
She works really, really hard, and some really, and the industry she's in it has no hours. There's no such thing as hours. You know, you're 24/7, especially when you're dealing with caregiving, and you're an independent contractor, which she is.
Right.
As a social worker and a child care advocate, and just a very busy, productive person all around.
Yeah, no, I was really impressed by her. She's probably Takesha is busy now as mayor. She's even busier than she was.
And they're probably coming up on some election stuff coming up, right?
Hagerstown is on fire. Man, I mean, look at the economic development in that town.
Really doing a phenomenal job.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they got thousands, they got big factories open, big thing. They're doing better than Martinsburg.
Ah, that has been the case for quite some time now.
You know, yeah.
Quite some time. So I'm going to reach out again all week long, John, and it's been a joy talking to you.
No, it's a pleasure.
You going swimming today?
No, because the pool, they're fixing the pool. They said, "Well, do you want to postpone your membership for 2 months because they're going to be working on the pool?" And I said, "No, I'll try to go down and do the machines or do something, you know." So I'm trying to answer your question. It depends on whether Ben is getting up and going with me this morning. So
how's the weather down that way?
Ah, it's beautiful. Yesterday it was 80 degrees, sunny.
Oh my
magnificent.
Goodness! All the way up to 80.
Oh yeah, and say oh, I. God. It's supposed to rain today,
man.
I think. But it's bizarre. West Virginia. West Virginia's in bad shape.
You gonna give us a song before we hit?
Yeah,
the
we could
o'clock
do. I had one too. What do I have queued up here? I got. Well, I have the I played Bruce's version of the Night Shift. Well, you can close with the Commodore's actual version of it. How's that?
Actual version. That's the one I was looking for. Hey, you know, Jimmy Kimmel, and I'm going to wrap this up real quick. It's 8
yeah.
a.m. now. Jimmy Kimmel did a thing on last night, had Mr. Number 45 in prison, yeah. sitting on the toilet.
Yeah.
He was sitting on the toilet with his orange jumpsuit around his ankles. And he was talking about why, you know, how he got locked up.
Yeah.
And so it was just a hilarious.
I bet.
You know,
well, Kimmel's been going after him.
The comedy arena, the stand-up comedians and all the night shows.
Oh, yeah.
They're the people, the Freuds. I mean, he makes a living off of that, being a Scheiden fraud.
Yeah, you know? You're right. That I don't know.
But it's in another context. It's very subtle.
We'll see what. I feel a little bit like Manchin there. We'll see what happens. By the way, on Joe, you know he's. It's interesting, right? He doesn't do anything on civil rights, and. I don't think I've never heard him say anything progressive about it at all. I've heard him steer down the middle of the road 20 or 30 times about everything in the state. But because African Americans are like, 3% of the state?
Mm-hmm.
He just he pays no attention whatsoever. None. And
civil and rights, two things that don't come together with him.
He's got a philosophy of opportunism. You know, I don't care whether the middle of the road is a sewer. That's where I am.
Just can't do that.
Yeah,
you can't do that. You can't go in there and you just can't do that. Yeah. We have to be careful about things that we do. And he's always surprised about something.
Yeah,
I'm not going to go in there and vote yes for something that I really don't understand. We have to be careful about these things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have to be careful when you hang a man by his neck. You want to make sure that
he's fully supported,
right? So, so that it's painless for him. You know?
That's right, man.
We don't want him to hang. We want to break his neck.
Well, I gave him that rope to support him.
Yeah, right. And get the, you know, don't bring that temperamental mule out here.
Yes, all right, man. All right, let me play this song, and we'll try to get up some, dig up some guests for next week, okay?
Yeah.
All right, buddy.
Okay.
Good to talk
to
you.
John,
stay in touch, man.
Weekend.
All right, here we go. Night Shift with the Commodores. We're going to do it.
Commodores, bring it on.
I think Bruce, he directly copied this. It's hard to tell the difference between the two recordings a little bit, but listen to it.
Yeah, I think Lionel Richie did.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Bruce is on tour, and he's getting the last surviving member of the Commodores is going to tour with him on his, him and the E Street Band's latest tour. How about that, huh?
Marvin, sang of the joy and pain. He opened up our mind, and I still can hear him say,
side.